So the time change has affected me only, it looks like. Feels like evening. Feels like bedtime. No. Good morning. Hope you guys are all having a great morning. And even though you lost an hour of sleep, as you can tell, I have. Hope it hasn't affected you that much. And hope you're excited to be here and study the Bible. If you want to open up to the book of Job in chapter 1, we're going to read quite a few verses there in just a few moments. Job chapter 1. We're going to look at some things there. I mentioned last week, I played quite a bit of sports growing up. I played football in high school, and there was something we did every week on the first practice day. We had played our games Friday night. We had the weekend to kind of recover. Then we came back to school on Monday, and the last thing we would do after we got beat up again in practice is we would go to the film room. And what we would do in the film room is we'd watch our game from the Friday before, and we'd look at all the mistakes we made, we'd look at all the good things that we've done, we'd look at all the bad things that we've done, and then what we would do is we would watch our opponents that's coming up the next week, we would watch their game footage. And we would look at all the good things that they did, and we would look at all the bad things that they did, and then we would go out the whole next week, and we would learn their plays, and we would learn how they ran things, and we would learn their moves, we would learn their secret weapons. We would learn as much as we could about our opponent so that when we came to play them the next Friday night, we would be ready for whatever they threw our way. And if you talk to any professional athlete, they do the same thing, even as professionals making millions and millions of dollars. Baseball is just around the corner, and so, of course, I'm very excited. And they've been talking to a lot of the baseball players, and they said, well, what did you do in the offseason? They said, man, I studied film. I wanted to learn where my strengths and my weaknesses were, but I've watched who we're also going to be competing against, and I want to learn what their strengths and what their weaknesses were. Well, I think one of the stupidest moves the devil has ever made was way back in the book of Job, because what he did for us there was he gave us a page right out of his playbook. And he gave us an opportunity to go into the film room and to sit down and study exactly what he does. I mean, he was an open door at this point, and he showed us exactly how he works, he showed us exactly how he moves, and exactly what he does. This morning, we're going to look at this. We're going to look at how what I think, if I were the devil, how I would operate, based on what he has shown us. You know, last week we looked at how to live a victorious life. And we noticed that if we want to make it to heaven and we want to achieve our goal, then we need to have a game plan on how to get there. And we looked at recognizing our enemy, who is the devil, and recognizing his battleground, which is this world. And this morning I want to open up his playbook. It's no secret that the devil wants to pull us away from God. I have this image in my head, and it's just something I came up with one day, that life is just a big game of tug-of-war between God on one side and the devil on the other. God wants us to be with Him, so He's trying to pull us this way, and the devil's pulling us the other way, but the devil doesn't want us on his side, the devil just wants us away from God. That's his plan, that's his focus, and it's no secret that that's his goal, and his mission is to do anything in his power to get us to sin and fall away from the glory of God. And the only way we will be able to defend ourselves from his attacks is to know exactly how he operates. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 12 tells us that we are not fighting a physical war against flesh and blood, but a war against principles and powers and the rulers of this age and the spiritual powers of darkness. If we have any hope in defeating the darkness of this world, we need to seriously get to know who our enemy is and how to stop him. And I think the best way to get to know the devil is to put ourselves in his shoes. You know, a good detective, when trying to solve a murder, if you like many of these detective shows that are on TV, a good detective, when trying to solve a murder, they try to think like the murderer. Not that they're going to go out and murder themselves, but that they want to think like the murderer would think to help them solve the case. Well, this morning, that's exactly what I want to do. I want to think like the devil thinks. I want to tell you that if I were the devil, how I would attack, what I would do to get you to come to me and away from God. And I think by doing this, if we all put ourselves in his shoes, not saying we're going to go out and be the devil, don't get me wrong, but I think we can learn a lot about how he operates so that in turn we can solve the mystery, solve the crime, and we can put a stop to him working in our lives. Let me tell you what I would do if I were the devil. Let's start reading in Job chapter 1, and we're going to start reading in verse 6 specifically. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. And the Lord said to Satan, "From where do you come?" So Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro on the earth, and from walking back and forth on it." Then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil?" So Satan answered the Lord and said, "Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not made a hedge around him, around his household and around all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But now stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not lay a hand on his person." So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. Now there was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And a messenger came to Job and said, "The oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them. When the Sabaeans raided them and took them away, indeed they have killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another came and said, "The fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another also came and said, "The Chaldeans formed three bands, raided the camels and took them away, yes, and killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another also came and said, "Your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, and suddenly a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house, and it fell on the young people, and they are all dead. And I alone have escaped to tell you." Then Job arose, tore his robe, shaved his head, and he fell to the ground and worshipped. Let me tell you what I would do if I were the devil, based on his playbook here. This is such an amazing story, because here we have a conversation between God and the devil. You have the epitome of good versus the epitome of evil. And they're meeting together here, face to face. And God offers his servant Job to Satan. He says, "Have you considered my servant Job? He is faithful to me, he loves me, he fears God, and he shuns evil." And so Satan pokes a little fun at God. He says, "The only reason he does that for you, God, is because you've built up this hedge around him, and you protect him, and you've given him so much stuff. So of course he loves you, God, because you've blessed him so richly. So take that away and let's see what Job does." And God says, "Fine. Everything of his is in your power," God says. "Now go do with them what you will, but just don't touch him personally." And so what we see the devil do first is something very interesting. If I were the devil, I would first attack your surroundings. Notice that Satan didn't touch Job. But his attack started with everything around Job, but not Job himself. We see that Satan attacked his livestock. Every servant that came, he says, "Your sheep were taken, your camels were taken, your oxen were taken." Everything was taken. Now, in that day and age, the livestock was how you made money. That was your wealth. That was your riches. And so, see, the first thing that Satan went after was what made Job powerful: his money, his wealth, his livestock. But it didn't stop there, because as that person, or as those people are coming and as they're speaking, it's one after another. And it says before he was done, another servant came and told him something else that was missing or something else that had been taken. And in each one, it says that the people who were taking the livestock, they killed all the servants. And if you were able to afford servants in that day, that was power. That showed that you were in charge over other people. That showed that you had enough money or enough wealth to own someone else or to have someone else work for you. And so Satan not only took the riches and wealth away, but he says, I'm going to take your power away. You no longer have anybody working under you anymore. But if that wasn't enough, all of Job's sons and daughters were eating in the oldest brother's house, which some would, and I kind of tend to lean this way, some would assume that this was Job's house given to his oldest son as an inheritance. That's why the emphasis is put on the oldest son. So this was Job's property, as many people claim to believe. And yet Satan takes that away as well. Mighty wind came and blew down all the four posts of the house, and the house came tumbling down. That was status if you had property. Think about it today. If you have a nice house, you have people that work for you, you have a lot of money, you're the powerful people in the world, aren't you? It doesn't take long to turn on the TV and to see these reality TV shows. And the famous people today, they have power, they have status, they have riches, they have wealth because they own property. They have people work for them and they have a lot of money. But Satan did one more thing. He didn't just attack those things. Is that he took the sons and daughters away from Job. He took his happiness right away. You know, a lot of people would play those top three things off as just things, right? Well, those are just things. My power, my riches, my wealth, my status. But then Satan took his family, his sons and his daughters, all together. Without laying a finger on Job, Satan just rattled his entire world. He didn't even have to confront Job himself. He used everything around him to get to Job. And let me just say that for most people today, that would be enough to turn them away from God and to the side of the devil. Most people, if they went bankrupt and they lost just their riches and wealth, it's God's fault. Most people, if they lose their power, if they were the CEO of a great company and all of a sudden everything falls out and they hit rock bottom and they lose all their power, that's enough to turn away from God in today's world. If you lose your status, if you lose a son or a daughter, you lose someone that you love that's close to you, it's God's fault. That's what the world says today. That's exactly how Satan still works. He uses what's around us, and he very rarely uses you to get to yourself. He uses other things to get to yourself. Instead, he will use friends and family. He will use wealth and power and status and happiness. He will send other people to tempt you to do the drinking or to go to the parties or to do the drugs. He will use your boss and your coworkers to get you to cuss and to miss worship services. He will use media to plant images and thoughts into our heads. He will use inappropriate songs on the radio, R-rated movies, and sin-riddled TV shows. Satan will use governments, he'll use schools, he'll use textbooks, cell phones, anything that he can get his hands on, he will use to attack us. And he attacks from every single angle. And he will attack our riches and our wealth and our power, our status and our happiness. He will take our jobs and he will take our families. He will infiltrate our families and he will use whatever he can to get to us. The problem is a lot of people today, and especially a lot of young people, and so I want the young people to listen to this part. A lot of young people will wait for Satan to stare them right in the face. And they say, I will know sin when I see sin. But what they don't realize is Satan is already working all around you to where when the sin does hit you in the face, it's going to be very, very hard to say no. That's why Peter tells us to be sober and to be vigilant, to always be looking for the devil because he's always around. Do you think the animal knows that the lion's about to attack? If you have ever watched National Geographic or the Discovery Channel or anything, and a lion's about ready to attack, the zebra or whatever it is, they just sit there. They don't know. They just sit there drinking, and you want to just tap on the screen and say, excuse me, you're about to be someone's lunch. And when they least expect it. But you see, what the devil or what the lion does is he uses the surroundings. He hides himself in the grass. He prowls low to the ground and blends in with the color of the ground. He uses his surroundings to get to his prey. The same thing is true of Satan today. that we wait for sin to stare us right in the face before making a decision whether to sin or not. But Satan doesn't work like that. Satan attacks everything around before he gets to us. And also, if I were the devil, I would attack your perseverance. Think about these few verses here as Job is listening and someone had just taken all of his oxen and his donkeys and they'd killed some of his servants. And then while he was still speaking, another servant came and talks about more stuff he's lost and more servants he's lost. And while he's still speaking, another servant comes. And it's almost just one blow after another, after another, after another for Job here. Satan just kept coming and coming and coming. He didn't slow down. He didn't say, okay, today I'm going to take Job's donkeys and I'm going to give him about a week break to kind of process this information. And then next week I'll come back and I'll take his oxen and then I'll give him another week or so because that's going to take some processing, you know. That's not how Satan worked. Satan said, I'm going to take everything. And just when he thinks, just when Job thinks it's going to be okay because I can deal with losing a few oxen and a few donkeys, no, I'm going to take more. And I'm going to take more and more and more. Satan doesn't slow down. I mean, think about what Job had to go through that day in a matter of just a few minutes, how much his world was overturned. First it was his oxen and his donkeys, then the servants, and then sheep and more servants, then the camels and more servants. And if that wasn't enough, it was his son's house and then his family. You know, I've heard so many people today in today's world say, well, this certain sin, I mean, fill in the blank, drinking, gambling, sexual addictions, whatever it is, this certain sin is not a temptation to me, so I don't have to worry about this in my life. Have you ever heard that before? I don't need to worry about drinking. I've never been tempted to drink. I don't need to worry about sexual impurity or about cheating on my spouse. I've never been tempted to do that before. If we are telling ourselves that, we're fooling only ourselves. We might think we're winning the battle against the devil by saying no once, twice, even 1,000 times. But if Satan doesn't care if you've said no 1,000 times before, he only needs you to say yes once. And he will keep coming. And he will keep coming. He won't stop. He doesn't care if we've said no 1,000,000 times. He just needs us to say no or say yes one time to sin. Listen to what Galatians 6 and verse 9 says. It says, let us not grow weary while doing good. For in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. A lot of people attribute that verse to we should just keep doing good, keep doing good, keep doing good. And that's rightfully so. But at the same time, there's something there to make us grow weary. Right? I think that's the devil at work. Attacking our perseverance to keep going, to keep pushing, to keep doing great things, to keep doing good things. He attacks our perseverance over and over and over and over again. You know, Jesus was tempted by the devil 3 times in the wilderness. But those 3 times weren't the only times Jesus was tempted. Did the devil say, okay, you've had enough, you've obviously proven yourself? But didn't the devil come back the night that Jesus said, I don't want to go through with this? Wasn't the devil dangling a carrot in front of Jesus' face saying, you know what, you don't have to go through with this, Jesus. Call on God. God will save you. God will pull you out of this world here. Satan just keeps attacking. Let's pick up in the book of Job in chapter 2 and verse 1. Let's read a few more verses there and we'll make a few more points. Sometime later, in verse 1 of chapter 2, again there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. And Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, from where do you come? So Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro on the earth and from walking back and forth on it. Then the Lord said to Satan, have you not considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil? And still he holds fast to his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without cause. So Satan answered the Lord and said, skin for skin, yes, all that a man has, he will give for his life. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you to your face. And the Lord said to Satan, Behold, he is in your hand, but spare his life. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with painful boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And he took for himself a potsherd with which to scrape himself, and while he sat in the midst of the ashes. Then his wife said to him, Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die. But he said to her, You speak of as one who is foolish. Shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall we accept adversity? In all this, Job did not sin with his mouth. See, the devil could have been done. The devil had lost the battle against Job. That God said, here's everything Job has. Take it away from him, and I guarantee you he will still worship me. So the devil did it, and Job still continued. And Job comes back to God here. And God even pokes a little fun at Satan. He says, see, you told me, Satan, that he would curse me, right? Well, he didn't. So Satan says, okay, fine. Touch his bones, which means, now let me get to him. And I'll show you. I'll show you. He'll curse you. And so God allows it. And so again, if I were the devil, what we see here is I would attack your health. Satan finally came after Job himself. His purpose was to get to his core. Finally touch him personally. Make him want to just give up. Touch that perseverance. Make him want to change his mind on God. But listen, I wouldn't just attack physical health. And you know, we can probably spend hours debating on do people get sick because Satan does it, or does God do it? We can spend hours on that. But for some reason, what we read here in Job was Satan was responsible for these boils on Job. But I would not just attack the physical health. I would, more importantly, I would attack your spiritual health. I would use the physical health to get to your spiritual. I would wear you down. I would make you feel horrible and make you feel vulnerable. My goal is to make you want to give up. Because if I were the devil, I would know that the Lord gives life, as Isaiah said in Isaiah chapter 38 and verse 16. Lord, by these things men live. And in all these things is the life of my spirit. So you will restore and make me live. The devil knows that. And the devil knows as long as we're with God, then we have a chance at eternal life. And we have hope at eternal life. Doesn't Jesus talk about the living water? But the devil does not want us to be with God. And so he'll attack us at our core. He'll attack not only our physical, but he'll attack our spiritual. And to do that, I will use the people around you. Notice who it was that came to Job and told him to just curse God and die. It was his wife. Satan's greatest weapon against Job was the person that Job trusted the most. And Satan used that against Job. And sometimes Satan will use someone that you thought you could trust. And Satan will sometimes use the person that you love the most. And sometimes the people closest to us will fail us, and it will hurt, and it will sting. But that's just Satan working. That's just Satan trying to get you to give up. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 13, or verse 33, we read, Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. And a lot of times we spit that verse out to young people. And we say, young people, be careful who you hang out with, because evil company can corrupt good habits, and that's the devil working, and we're absolutely right. But you know what? Adults need to hear this just as much as young people. Because adults, we're in the world too. And we go to work, and we have families that aren't Christians. And the people that we choose, and let me make that clear, that we choose to surround ourselves with, they can lead to our downfall. And we can say things like, but they're good people, and they're good friends, and they've been there for me in the past, and they've done good things for me in the past. But if those people are leading us to sin, where is that going to get us in eternal life? And that's just another deception that the devil uses, to use good people to lead us away from God. We need to be very careful who we put our trust in. If we can learn one thing from Job, it's that his trust was in one person and one person only: God. His wife failed him. He would have three friends come to visit him, and guess what? They would fail him. But God never did. And here's what I find so amazing. Let me step out of the role of the devil for just a moment. God has confidence in us. God has extreme confidence in us to fight against the devil and win. Did you notice what he said in chapter 1 and verse 8 of Job? Have you considered my servant Job? Notice that was God that gave Job up. That wasn't Satan that said, hey, can I test him? Can I pick him? It was God that said, have you considered my servant Job? There's none like him on the earth, a blameless and an upright man, one who fears God and he shuns evil. It was God that had the confidence in Job. God knew that, you know what, Satan, you can do whatever you want to Job, and he will shun evil and he's going to continue to fear me. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, the verses we read in our scripture reading just a few moments ago, says, therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. But with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. In other words, God trusts and has confidence in each and every one of us, that no matter what we're going through, no matter what the devil throws at us, we can overcome it. We can have that victorious life we talked about last week. We can beat the devil because God has confidence in us and God is behind us. Listen, we need to be very careful how the devil works in our lives. I want to read you something. Something that was written in 1965 by a preacher. And I want you to listen to this in terms of today's world. And I want you to see if it's come true or not. This preacher said, if I were the prince of darkness, I would want to engulf the whole world in darkness. I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, and that's you. So I would set about, however necessary, to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first, and I would begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve, do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth, and I would convince the children that man created God instead of the other way around. I'd confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And to the old, I would teach to pray after me, our Father who art in Washington. Then I'd get organized and I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each, in its turn, was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellect, but neglect to discipline emotions. I'd tell teachers to let those students run wild. And before you knew it, you'd have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. With a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing and judges promoting pornography. Soon, I would evict God from the courthouse and the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. In his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I'd lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who want it until I had killed the incentive of becoming ambitious. What you'll bet, I couldn't get the whole states to promote gambling as a way to get rich. I convinced the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, and that what you see on television is the way to be. And thus, I could undress you in public and lure you into bed with diseases for which there are no cures. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's already doing. That was written in 1965. Can you see that every single one of those things is true today? That's because the devil is working. That's because the devil is attacking silently. He's using what's around us. He's cutting at our perseverance. And he's making sure he's winning. You and I have a battle to fight. But you and I can have victory through Jesus Christ. That no matter how bad it gets in the world around us, no matter how evil the world seems to get, no matter how corrupt this world is, God will always give us victory. And there's going to be one day where every knee will bow. And I pray that as my knee touches the floor, and as my tongue is confessing his name, I pray that I can look over to one of my sides and I can see the devil doing the same exact thing. And I pray that I can see the people who decided to not follow God look at the devil and say, "We put our faith in you and you failed us." But I also pray that I can see all of you looking up to God and saying, "I put my faith in you and you delivered." If you're here today and you're tired of fighting against the devil alone, it's time to make some changes. It's time to give your life to God. It's time to be forgiven through the waters of baptism. And it's time to have that victorious life waiting for you in heaven. If there's something we can do for you this morning, come forward as we stand and as we sing.